Cape Talk.
Call 021-446-0567.
16 minutes past 9, and to London we go. Gavin Gray is our correspondent out in London, bringing us up to speed with what's happening in and around the rest of the world. Gavin, a very good morning to you, and welcome to Cape Talk on a Sunday morning.
Yeah, good morning to you too.
Gavin, President Putin tells the leader of Finland, and I think Putin has put this out there quite often to say, you know, you go up against me, you will be in trouble. And he's told Finland that joining NATO would be a mistake.
Yes. Now, this was the result of a phone call that the Finnish president made to the Russian president. Finland shares a 1,300-kilometer border with Russia and has always stayed out of NATO to avoid antagonizing Russia. Indeed, Russia's made it clear that it wants a buffer, a land buffer between it and NATO. And although President Putin hasn't actually made a specific threat of what he was doing, he did tell the Finnish president that joining NATO and abandoning the neutral status that Finland has observed for decades would be, quote, a mistake. Now, what might that retaliation look like? Well, already it's been noted that electricity supplies from Russia to Finland have been suspended. Now, the Russian energy supplier, RAO Nordic, mentioned problems with payments. Well, the Finnish National Grid executive says that actually Russian imports account for 10% of the national supply. They're looking to replace that 10% with alternative sources. But this isn't the only thing, of course. Sweden, next door neighbor, is also now looking to join NATO as well. You might think, well, this is all fairly straightforward. They would apply and that would be fine because people want them in this group. And they'll be getting a quick access to membership. But that might not be the case because a stumbling block to both Sweden and Finland joining could come from Turkey, who's accused both countries of harboring terrorist organizations. Now, we think, I didn't specify what that is, but we think that's a reference to the Kurdistan Workers' Party, the PKK, which Turkey regards as a terrorist organization and has a presence with both Finland and Sweden with large Turkish communities. So it might be a bit of a stumbling block, it might not, but certainly what a developing story this is, that Russia's intention to stop Ukraine joining NATO might actually result, and that the war that they've conducted in Ukraine might result in actually more countries joining NATO.
And at the G7 summit, I mean, staying with Ukraine, the UK's foreign secretary said international sanctions against Russia should only be lifted once all its troops have left Ukraine. And, you know, I wonder whether we could put a time limit on this, whether there are sort of ideas of this happening soon.
Yes, I think what they're trying to point out, both the Foreign Secretary Liz Truss here in the UK, but also our Prime Minister Boris Johnson, is that in 2014, when Russia annexed Crimea, which is, of course, in Ukraine, the Western world sort of went tut, tut, tut and didn't do anything. And I think what the UK is trying to call out here is saying, right, this time, that's not going to happen. This time, we are going to continue ratcheting the pressure up on Russia, not using their oil and gas, which is going to cost them billions and billions of South African rand over any period of months. That's going to be the way to actually get them out of Ukraine. And by Ukraine, the UK is beginning to suggest like that means all of Ukraine, including Crimea, which they annexed 8 years ago. And that is going to be a real sticky point because Russia will not want to lose territory as a result of going into an area which they intended to seize. So the G7 ministers have been meeting across the weekend with indeed Liz Truss in Berlin for a meeting with NATO foreign ministers. And she's really pushing for a strengthened and modernized, is the quote, strengthened and modernized version of the Western alliance, and says Putin is humiliating himself on the world stage. We must ensure he faces defeat in Ukraine, and that denies him any benefit and then ultimately constrains him from further aggression.
And sometimes when you, the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson, you've got to take a very difficult decision, and this is a decision that's not going to be very popular, by cutting 90,000 civil service jobs to free up cash.
Well, it won't be popular, Zane, with those, of course, who might not have a job at the end of the day. But the number of civil servants has rocketed in the last 3 or 4 years. Now, the civil servant union said, look, that's because Brexit took a lot to organize, is taking a lot of manpower to organize, and then the pandemic. But this government is saying, whoa, hang on a minute. We still have a terrific number of civil servants and some 475,000 civil servants. And what I want to do, he says, is to take it back to the number of civil servants, 384,000, employed in 2016. So the loss of some 90,000 is quite a significant cut, though, as you can imagine. Roughly sort of one in five, one in six, with the Prime Minister saying that this needs to be looked at, and the savings will go to help people with the cost of living crisis. Now, I know, yes, you're right. For some, that's going to say, oh, gosh, this is terrible for the civil service and will lead to widespread cuts and might lead to cuts in services. But I think an awful lot of people will actually think, this is good because I don't think my civil servants are good value for money. I don't think they're pulling their weight. Many have not returned to the office. They're still working from home. And the civil service seems rather sort of bloated and inefficient to me. So, yeah, that's what Boris Johnson has pledged, and others are just saying he's just trying to gain secure headlines, positive secure headlines, before the bad news comes in about Partygate.
Here's a first for me. You know, you hear of smallpox and all the other kind of pox, but I haven't heard of monkeypox. Now, we've had somebody diagnosed and pass on in the KZN area after visiting Nigeria, and this person contracted Lassa fever. And you have a similar case where two more people have been diagnosed with monkeypox in England.
Yes, so that brings the total to three. Now, monkeypox is a rare viral infection. Most people recover in a few weeks, but it is contagious, and what's more, it leads to some really unpleasant fever, headache, aching muscles, backache. You get swollen lymph nodes, so you get these sort of what looks like spots, huge spots on your skin, but also chills and exhaustion. Now, eventually, these sort of large spots and rashes form a scab, and that falls off, but it's really not very, very nice at all and can cause severe illness. So we now understand that there's that single case from the 7th of May, but now there are two more diagnosed with monkeypox in England. Of the two cases, one is receiving care in the southwest of London and is isolating. Basically, this is something that I think makes headlines because it's quite a scary monkeypox, one you've not heard of before. But the UK health authorities are saying, look, don't worry, we've got this under control, and it isn't necessarily life-threatening. But, of course, when you hear two more new cases that aren't necessarily related to the first but are related to Nigeria, that is much more worrying.
Chatting to Gavin Gray out in London, our UK correspondent, and we catching up with what's happening in the world. Of course, Andrew Simmons is a very sad story that came out earlier this morning, and he's passing out in Australia. Gavin, 50 migrants have been told that they will be the first to be sent back to Rwanda in East Africa. I mean, this was a very controversial resettlement policy of the UK government right from the get-go.
Yes, and I can hear the howls of protest from pressure groups, charities, and indeed MPs from the government's own party. I can hear those howls from here, I suspect, and there will certainly be lots of legal challenges. But the Prime Minister and the government believes, look, by threatening and indeed taking some migrants who have come to the UK illegally on boats across the English Channel from France, by flying them out to Rwanda, is going to put off those in northern France from coming. Because that crossing across the English Channel, the world's busiest shipping channel, is so dangerous when you're in a tiny dinghy. But the numbers doing it are rapidly increasing, and last year some 28,500 people made the crossing, up from 8,000 the year before. And the figures so far this year suggest that the 28,000 is going to be even higher. And I don't think anyone really thinks it could just carry on as it is. The question is what to do about it. Well, the government suggested the Rwanda policy, based on something, incidentally, that the Australians are conducting, that sort of offshore processing. But, yeah, lots of people against it, including very vocally the Archbishop of Canterbury here, who was rather told to stick to his day job by a couple of critics of his. We're told the first 50 are going to be processed shortly. But wait, just wait for all the legal challenges to that, Zane. I suspect that those 50 probably will have endless appeals.
Mm. And of course, you know, it's a difficult decision, and it's a difficult thing when you have to resettle people from your country back again, you know, to Rwanda. But then Rwanda in itself is actually an incredible country in Africa, and it's really one of the sort of technologically advanced countries when you look at the African continent. Gavin, thank you so much for your time. Have a wonderful Sunday morning. That's Gavin Gray, catching up with him as to what's happening in and around the rest of the world.